we're going in the mobile summit and how we can better coordinate some of that.
I'm sorry, I launched the recording. I missed what you said, sorry.
Oh, so now that we're recording, we should say the attendance here today is rather light. So we're trying to make sure that the agenda meets our needs. And so we were talking about skipping the project updates because there's not really a lot of folks here to give those updates. And those who are here have been in all those meetings already. I was just proposing maybe we should add the agenda item to talk a little bit about the mobile summit work that's going on in the areas working group call, and maybe share some feedback over how that we might better facilitate that, or how we might recruit some more maintainers of various components of the community using that as a tool.
That's an excellent suggestion. Let me, since I'm sharing my screen here, let me see if I can bring that up from the call yesterday. I think that went really well. Let's see if I can.
Well, you're navigating the browser. I would like to add, Sam, you did a great job facilitating that. I thought that got a bunch of people excited on my team. So if that's any measure, I think we would have been hard pressed for it to have gone better.
I was pleased. My goal is to try and like light a fire and see what happens. So, and then help it along the way. I have fewer opinions about mobile than I have the desire to like have things happen. So, I am grateful for your feedback and involvement, that has helped make it good. Grouping things together, I think was a really useful step that I think is going to help a lot. I did publish, by the way, on the Aries, in the Aries Rocket Chat channel. Please help us find a good meeting link using When is good, and that has been posted. I didn't link it back to this agenda, but I should link it here in case people run into it. And we'll be running that for the next couple of days to try and find the right time to actually meet together.
Yeah, in fact, you could add like a clear paragraph of, this is what we've decided so far. This is the next step. Here's the link. You need to click on it and tell us the following thing. That will help, because that was the biggest question I got from those who were excited was, when are these meetings going to happen? They seem really important to us.
I'll add an update to the top of this that says like, hey, here's what's going on. Grab the link. And then as we make a decision, I can make that obvious too.
Yeah, I think this is that went extremely well yesterday. I think getting all of these topics listed and then categorized into potential meeting slots, I think was really good. I think our industry tends to work really well when we're heading towards a specific goal. And so that's what this page seemed to say to me, is that we have these different goals to accomplish, you know, the sub items on these different days. If I'm reading that right, are we planning on, this is the agenda for the next 12 weeks or thereabout, if I'm seeing that right?
I don't know if it's going to be 12, but it's certainly for the next like three that kind of sets the agenda, and then we'll see what kind of progress we make. And given that we're doing this once a week, it gives us time to write code in between, but it also helps us to like change the format if something just isn't working. So
right,
I think that's good.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I think being able to focus in specific areas on specific days is a good way to go about that. So, how do we get started? What can we do in prep for one of these meetings?
I have some wiki work to do. The big plea that I have is to spread the word. And if there's something that I can do more, then I would love to know, but I sort of exhausted trying to like get things started. And there's a lot of folks that are just busy doing that. We need to have them involved here. Right. If you know someone like on another team that you're not sure has heard about it, or even just to redundantly make sure, spreading the word is going to be absolutely critical to getting the right people there. And again, I don't expect everyone to be at all of the meetings, depending on where they have interest and where they don't. But I think that we definitely want all of the people that care to be there, because we need their expertise, their wisdom, their experience, and ideally a commitment to pursue what we communally decide together. And that's the most important bit, is just that people are present. So big plea is spread the word. I'll have a wiki page up that actually has sort of the outline and the basic concepts that can be like a shareable link. And that will help substantially.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm happy to spread the word how I can. I know our company is very, very interested in Aries and seeing this progress. And we are very, very mobile centric. We do desktop as well, but we've concentrated on the two main mobile platforms plus web, as far as our focus has been. All right. Anything else to discuss on this area? I know we haven't really kind of got started in the Aries working group yet, so there's not too much to discuss, but two thumbs up. I think we're on the right track here.
Yes. Hi, I just wanted to introduce myself to this call. Tim Bloomfield. I'm working with Ontario on our digital identity efforts. And just to echo the comments that, this list of discussion topics is, we're grappling with all of them right now. So very timely.
Excellent, Tim. Thank you for joining. Can I ask you a question? Ontario, so are you collaborating with the BC Gov team, or are you
separate? We're collaborating fairly closely, very closely with other provinces, including,
Okay, excellent. Yeah, we're working with them as well. And I've seen a couple of presentations out of the Ontario group, but I was just wondering what the connection was.
Yeah, we're trying to build something, trying to get something consistent between the provinces. Perfect.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining this morning. Hopefully this will be interesting. As Sam mentioned just a minute ago, he's going to put some calendar links related to when they're going to talk about what. I think it's all important, but that will allow you to determine what's of most interest.
Great, thank you.
All right. Well, let's see. I've got a presentation I'd like to share. I like to be interrupted, so if something piques your interest or gets your attention, please just interrupt away and ask. Let me flip over to that. And whenever I stop and start screen sharing, it always changes my screen layout, which I'm not a fan of. All right. So one of the things, let me size this down so it's probably larger on your screen, becomes easier to see. One of the things that we've been working on is, like everybody, how to get the most done writing the least code. And so at Anonymy, our platforms are mobile and they're native mobile, which means for the Android side, we program in Kotlin largely, and Swift on the iOS side. And then for browsers, it's a little bit different. So part of what happened a few years ago, back in the earlier days of SSI, is all the libraries were written in Rust, and then there were language wrappers wrapped around that so that you could have native Objective-C, native Java calls into the Rust libraries. And that was extremely helpful. It also created a situation where wrapper code's not the most exciting. It's often complex, especially when you get pointers involved and multi-threads and so forth. It becomes something people aren't really interested in spending a lot of time in. And so in recent years, for other reasons too, we've seen some of these like Ares libraries and so forth migrate to other languages such as Go or JavaScript and the like. And so that's good because native programming on whatever platform that you're on is a good thing. And keeping all your code base cohesive with libraries you're using is also a good thing. The problem is I started to feel like it was dividing the community just a little bit, not in terms of specification mission, but in terms of code writing and artifact creation. And so I started to look, is there an easier way to do this? Nobody likes writing wrapper code. I'll show you some examples of what it looks like. And so I started looking around, is there an automatic way to say convert a JavaScript library into Rust or into C or into Java? And those things exist, but they're not terribly good. And so the best thing was what we did in the early days, which was this foreign function interface or FFI layer. But then again, that's something that people didn't really like to do. And so in looking around, I came across a project at Mozilla where they're struggling with the same thing. So they're struggling with the same thing, trying to be on multiple platforms, not wanting to rewrite the code every time they move to a new platform because that creates parallel code bases that can get out of sync. They require all the extra testing and so forth. And so they looked at taking the Rust libraries, exposing a foreign function interface, and then automatically generating language wrappers around that. And so that's what I've done here. I have some very simple examples to show some of these concepts. And then what I've done is I've taken the Hyperledger. The Hyperledger DidComRS library and converted it using this method. So now we can call into that Rust-based library from Swift or Python or different languages and do so natively. And so that becomes more intuitive for the...
Hey, Steve, are you in presentation mode on the slide deck? Because we're just seeing the auto-generating language-specific wrappers for Rust libraries title slide.
Oh, okay. I'll just step through the slide. Sorry about that. I got sidetracked and didn't advance my own slide. So, this is what I was just describing. Common library down at the bottom. Different wrapper instantiations that allow higher-level applications to interface with that common library. So here's a very simple example of a function that I decided to write. I wanted to test this out. I wanted to write the most simple function I could. And so I wrote a function that you pass in a string and you count the characters and you return the result. And so that was the simplest function that I could create that I felt like it was doing something moderately useful. And so this is the way it turned out. So on the Rust side, I had to declare this function as an extern C. And then I passed in a pointer and it returns an integer. So it passes in a C style pointer, which is a little foreign for Rust not so widely used in a lot of languages because it is in fact unsafe. And so what the first step was to take that address and kind of convert it into something that we can use in Rust. And so I had to go through this unsafe conversion process to convert that pointer, the C style pointer, into what Rust will call a C string or a CSTR. And then I wanted to be able to take the count of that easily. And in Rust, the way to do that is to have an actual Rust string. And so I had to take that object that I had created out of that pointer, convert it to a regular Rust string and unwrap it and so forth. And there's several places in here where errors can happen, and it's not really good. We moved away from some of the C pointers originally for very good reasons, and here we're having to deal all with that. Once I did get the regular Rust string, I could call the chars function to get the list of the characters, and then call a count and then return that. So I get exactly what I want, but this is not the kind of programming most programmers want to do. And this gets even more exacerbated when there's lots of parameters, objects are involved, and we're trying to translate things back and forth. And so maintaining this layer is kind of a thankless job, which is, I think, one of the main contributing factors for people wanting to go with native programming anyway. And so this is kind of what I was describing that Mozilla did. They created some tools that will automatically generate language bindings in the native languages for Kotlin, Swift, Python, and C++. And how you do that is, I'll walk through it, but you create an interface definition of the public functions you want to create, and then the tool goes ahead and creates all of this FFI code I just described.
Just a question, do we have any idea if Unify has tried to address the Go native issue that CGo has had? Because this file definition mechanism is very similar to what Swig and some of the other things in the past have done, but it's been rethought and cleaned up a lot. You don't have a lot of the difficulties that you used to have with Swig interface files.
Yeah, as far excuse me. As far as I know, the answer is no. I know there's a couple of additional languages on the wish list, JavaScript being one of the main ones, and they're just not there. I checked that. I asked the folks over there about 2 weeks ago on that, and this is the list that they've got right now. I think their path forward is to solidify all the features they want in these four languages now. And then I'm presuming that they're going to go circle back and then add in additional languages later. JavaScript is one I'd really like to see in there. I don't use Go too much, but I know it's super popular and a lot of people would like that. So I don't know if anything is kind of being skunked work over there, but I haven't seen any announcements that anything's even in alpha or beta at this point.
Cool, very interesting. A lot of our Rust library stuff got knocked off track because of the strong interest in the Go language that comes from our collaborators that came out of the Fabric project.
Yeah, totally agree. Aries Framework Go has a really good following and is advancing quite a bit. I wish this method would support that and be kind of the universal solution. Right now for us, Kotlin, Swift, and Python are our main languages at the moment. So for us, this is a really good fit. And so kind of what took me on this genesis was Jolicom created the DidComRS library and released it to Hyperledger. And so I thought, well, what's the easiest way to get that library that we can just pull from the open source community and use that natively in our applications? The FFI stuff was obviously a choice, but newer higher level programmers really don't like dealing with C pointers, among other things. And so there was kind of some pushback when I proposed it that way. So yeah, I will keep track on what I hear the proposals being when new languages come along and let everyone know. But this is something that I could take an existing library, modify it myself, really, and then use it internally and release the updates back to the community. So I've talked to some folks at Jolicom about this. They're intrigued. And so I just need to push some updates. Just I won't go into this right now, but on this link right here, I've created some really basic tutorials on how to go through the Unify steps that I'm going to talk about, as well as I've got some readmes in there that go into quite a bit of detail on what things mean and why this step and, you know, and how that all proceeds. My initial tutorial was just a quick how FFI works and how to build a simple library, call it, and use it that way. The next one, Wrapper Intro, was just very simple Unify. It was meant just to take you through the steps, kind of a hello world level of application. And then the next one showed how to use all of the supported data types, you know, things like ints and floats and Booleans and structures, stuff like that, to kind of show how that all worked. And so that's, I have that GitHub link, and I'll post these slides on the wiki page here. And so you can download those and take a look at those. So when you create a Unify application, the first thing you do is just as normal, build your REST library. And anything that you want to be an API function or an external public callable function, go ahead and specify that. And I'll talk about some lessons learned on as I was doing that. And then you build your library. The other thing that you do have to do, so I say this is an automatic generation. It really is, but Unify does currently require you to write a UDL representation. UDL is the Unify Definition Language, so it's really like IDL. You need to create that for all of your API functions. Once that's done, then the tool knows how to go about building everything and can build code that is just, it's just automatic and it's compilable. You don't have to do anything to it. And so, the red is what you need to do, build your library, write the UDL, and then the tool will generate a scaffolding layer. So that FFI sample function I showed above, that's what this tool does. It creates all of that, even for complex functions and everything. There are a few limitations, but it'll generate that for you. The next step is using their tool, you can generate a native language specific implementation layer. So that sits right on top of what they're calling the FFI scaffolding layer. And that's what makes FFI feel like your native language. And so it converts, you know, snake case to camel case and things like that, as well as using all the native types and objects. And then at that point, you just build your native application, import it as a library, as you normally would, and then use it. So here's a quick sample pulled from those examples above. Basically, in the simplest example, I just created a function where I'd pass in a Boolean and return the opposite. And so this shows how to create that in Rust. You are including the Unify generated library, which hasn't been generated yet, but you put that in there. And then on the cargo TOML side, you just add dependencies for the Unify version that they're using, and then the build dependency for that, and then you create a dynamic library. So it's really kind of simple. That's why I could take a large existing library. I've done this for DidComRS, and also I'm about to complete it for libindy. Yes, I know libindy's being retired, but we're still using it. And so I wanted to use that as kind of a test. Also, it's a quiet repo since there's not many updates these days. But anyway, that's all you need to do to your TOML file, and then things just work. So creating the UDL for that same function, you just specify the return type, the function name, and the parameters, and that's about it. You put it in a namespace that we'll use to call it from the upper level applications. This is what the scaffolding layer looks like. So this is all that stuff nobody wants to write. Nobody really wants to read it either, but it's super necessary. This is all the FFI stuff that programmers had written for other Rust libraries and still do. So basically we just run that tool, that command line where it says run this, and this is a portion of what gets generated. It's quite a bit of code depending on how many functions are in your public interface. And then in this case, I was creating a Swift-based Mac application. And so again, it's one line of code. You just specify the language. That could be Python, Kotlin, or C++. And notice what it did is part of this generation, it actually converted from snake case to camel case as part of smoothing all of this out. It handles all the error handling and everything. And so what the calling programmer will be able to see is that here's a library, here's a function that takes a parameter, gives a result. And it does so in a very friendly native feeling way. And so this becomes something that higher level programmers are more comfortable with. And they like this, the ones I've talked to, they prefer this over the other. Doing the same thing for Python, it's exactly the same. You swap out the language you're gonna generate it for. You don't change the UDL, don't do anything different. This literally is the only change from what we've done so far to get now a Python wrapper created. And then this is what it looks like right here. So that also now feels like native Python. Now creating this, there's a couple of steps we need to do. These are very traditional, shouldn't be different for anything. First of all, you include the library that we created there. I called it library because it was an example. You'd probably want to name it something better. And then part of what was auto-generated was this library.swift call. So that contains all the API layer for the Rust library on top of the FFI layer in that Swift format. And then the way Mac apps work, when you do this, it needed a bridging header. And so that that was auto-generated and passed in as well. So what I did as the programmer of this tool is I just included those things on the left. And then I just created this little, tiny little application and everything worked, the test passed. So very simple. Same thing for Python. I just created that basically one line of code, import the library, and then call the routine there on line 4. Very, very simple. It looks like native programming. Now for DIDCOM, hopefully this isn't too small. For DIDCOM RS, I had to do a couple of things. So first of all, just like I described above, I created an interface for, in this case, the message class was all I really cared about. And that has a constructor. So we're gonna call that in upper level languages by calling new or whatever it needs to be. And then for some other, Unify does have a limitation right now that it can't pass back generic objects. That's being fixed. But what I did, because the DIDCOM library does have a routine where you pass in some data, it parses the data, and then it returns a message object back to you. What I did to make that work is I added another constructor, which Unify supports, and I just called it new receive. So here's just, you create a new one, which is default data, and then this new receive that I created allows you to pass in incoming data. It will parse it into all the fields and then return that back for you. Let's see, the other thing it's important to note that an object And Rust is everything it ever was. It doesn't have to be any different. But when it goes through the unify layer, objects are either an object, meaning they contain methods that you can access from outside, and it's passed by reference, or it can be defined as a dictionary where you can access directly the data elements, so dot name, dot count, that kind of stuff. And that is passed by value. And in unify, those can't be both. So you can't create an object like we do and just directly access the data members while also being able to access the function members. If you think about it, that's not really super good practice anyway. It's better to go through a getter setter type function. And that's what unify, at least at this point, requires you to do. That I don't think is going to change. And so it's important to define your interface as functional interfaces and not so much directly data, direct data access interfaces. I think that's not a bad thing. Like I say, I had to jump through a few hoops when creating this UDL for the DIDCOM library, but it wasn't really bad. I just had to think about what I wanted to do and how I wanted to present it externally. So here's an example. In this case, what I ended up doing is I actually added a little bit of code to the DIDCOM library itself. In this case, I'm looking at the from, the sender data. And so I had to add these getters and setters, whereas the original DIDCOM library just lets you access that directly. I had to add these functions for passing in a string and returning a string. You'll notice this funkiness right here. At the time that I wrote this one, and so I need to go back and update it, I wasn't able to use the result function that Rust uses the way it does. But then I have an example down below where I show how to use that. So just when I wrote this, I was returning the error in a message field just so that I would be able to get the error back if there was an error. But you don't have to do that anymore. So if that looks weird to you, it's because it is weird. And I took a shortcut to make this work, but I'll show you how to do that properly. And then I'll go back and update this library. So I mentioned libindy. So we're still using it right now until we make the migration. And so I wanted to update libindy to be able to work with this. Now, libindy is very complicated, and probably you all know. I know two of you helped write it in large measure. And so you know how complicated it is. So just taking one thing, I was looking at the blob storage just to show an example. There's a core method down here on line 33 that says open reader, and it accepts some parameters and returns an error code and does what it does. Now with there's a function, a public function. So that's an internal function. The public function then implements a completion handler, a future. And so you either get back the indy handle or the indy error. And so this is something, this box dying future stuff, that's not currently supported by Unify. And part of the reason is it gets kind of complicated to take the architecture of one language and map that kind of functionality onto other languages. And so I don't know when or if that functionality might be supported. So what I did right here is I basically added this function right up here. I called it U for Unify, but U open reader. I pass in the same parameters, and now I'm getting the same result that was listed here as either an I-32 or an indy error. So a handle to that. And I just weighed on that. So I call this function that's down on line 25, call it with a wait, something you might do in a calling application. It's just that the API layer, since it doesn't do the completion handling, had to be done this way. So it's kind of blocking. So what that would mean is in your upper level code where you call this, if you want to put that into some sort of a different type of handling mechanism, you're totally free to do that. So if you want to put it off in a new thread, depending what the function does, you can put it off in a new thread and handle it that way. LibIndy was very neat in the way that it had the core function and then put the completion handling code, wrap that around it. It's just with Unified that that's not the way they do things. And so I ended up writing a bunch of these kinds of functions to handle that. I got these slides out of order. Yeah, we can skip that. Okay, we can skip that too. So another thing that I did that is a current limitation with Unify, Rust allows you to return tuples, and they can be kind of a collection of arbitrary nameless objects. So in this case, the issuer create schema function in LibIndy in the non-creds file did kind of the same thing as before with the box and that. But then it also returned this tuple. And so since that's not supported by Unify and may not be supported by the upper level language, depending on what the language is, I had to turn that into some sort of structure. And then that's something that I would document as part of creating this new multipurpose API layer. So what I did just as a quick example is down here in the namespace, you can show the error handling that way. And then it's going to return, I just called it string because I'm lazy and not very creative at this point. And then I defined a dictionary that has two members, A and B, representing each of those strings. And so what I would do here is just like up here when I created this function right here, since OpenReader returns a result, I can just return it and define that in the UDL and handle it that way. But otherwise, if I had to do any kind of repurposing of return parameters to put them in that structure, I would do that right here before returning it. And so that's how I would handle that right here. So this is just the UDL side of things. I haven't shown the function that I wrapped around this to do that, but that's how you'd set that up. Okay, some of these are out of order. I should have talked about that. I don't need that. So anyways, this has been really helpful for us because it gives us a library as a result. And we've published the DIDCOM library. I don't think I put a link on here. I'll add a link to that. We published the DIDCOM library on our GitHub page as a fork of the original. My intent is to push those changes back to the library if everyone likes them. My plan is to give this presentation to the DIDCOM working group and see what they say conceptually about this, if people want this to be kind of part of the mainstream repos or what they'd prefer. I think this is a good idea because it didn't really take me a whole lot to do this. Once I figured out how all these processes work, it's really not super hard to create a UDL file of public exported functions, make a few redefinitions when necessary, but then what happens, as long as your API layer never changes, but you're just making underlying code changes, everything is automatically generated. Those two lines of code for generating the scaffolding layer followed by the language mapping layer, That's all you need to do. And that can be easily put into some sort of a build chain. And it can just automatically be regenerated. Once this, in the case of Apple products, they will use CocoaPods. So the outputs of this process in terms of library and whatnot can be repackaged into a CocoaPods distribution, just the way it is now. So anyway, that's what I wanted to present today, was that I'm making progress with this method. And I'm now tackling larger libraries. And so any of the libraries, some that I'll look at in the future, there's, I know BCGov has created the shared libraries for Aries. And so you've got ASCAR, the shared libraries, and then there's a third one, I can't remember the name, but I've looked at those a little bit and think that I can make some additions to those so that we can turn those into automatically being generated for, at this point, Kotlin, Swift, and Python, and then whatever languages are added in the future. So anyway, that's my presentation. What, any questions, comments? How does this approach strike you for getting language wrappers? Okay. Well, I will post the, I'll post this presentation. I'll put these slides back in order the way they were supposed to be. And then I will post links as well to our repos where we're working on this right now. So I'll put that back on the Identity Implementers Wiki page. So feel free to check those out and let me know what you think after you've had a chance to play with it. And yeah, thank you for listening to my presentation.
This is very cool, and I'm excited about how this could get us back to some of the implementation-driven standardization we had before. One of the reasons why we really liked the Rust shared libraries early on is it let us very quickly have kind of a de facto standard, because everyone could depend on the same code. And, you know, things like how indie error works and what error messages pop up or get boiled up are really easy to do in a common way when everyone is using similar implementations. And it also makes, you know, testing things against each other easier, because you know you have similar patterns because you're working off a similar library. So, you know, getting back to where this library is available in a lot of different places and doing a lot of the core functionality, I think will help us make a lot of standards progress quickly, because we can drop functionality in and use it in all the different platforms. And then if they want to specialize or move off the library, that's fine. But we can kind of test our way through that instead of starting from scratch.
Yeah, that's good feedback. Thank you. I like hearing that. I'm the same way. As I'd like to see us have a common format at least, you know, at a minimum within our own company, you know, so we don't have multiple code bases. But I know that's helpful across everybody. And, you know, for years, libindy was the go-to for implementing this. And it was the gold standard. You know, there's new things emerging now and the specifications are migrating. But yeah, I'd like to also see a new gold standard created by the community that we can all conform to. Let's see. It slipped my mind. I was going to say something else. What's neat about this approach is, generally speaking, you can build your Rust library how you want. There are these few gotchas about objects and getters and set of stuff like that. But that's kind of easy to add even after the fact, really. And so, like I say, libindy is a ton of code, and that's part of why I decided to try to tackle this. And so I'm almost complete with that. And I'll be publishing that as well. Still realizing, you know, people aren't using it as much, but a lot of people are, so it's still of interest. But it was a wonderful exercise for me to try to figure out how all this fits together. And give Unify a large test. Well, thank you very much. So we meet every 2 weeks, so we will be meeting again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you, and if you have other questions, I'm on Slack and Rocket Chat and email, and I'd love to hear from you. Thank you all very much, and if there's no other questions, I'll let you have a few minutes back of your day. Thanks for attending.
Great, thanks very much.
Hey, thanks for all your efforts, Steve. Looks good.
Thank you.